It's my pleasure now to introduce, we have a missionary speaker this morning. So Jim Sliz is in country for another week, and then he's heading back to Ukraine with Family of Christ International. And so he's going to share a little bit about their ministry and give us a nice gospel charge this morning. So Jim, come on up.
It was so nice sitting or standing up here and hearing this large of a choir singing behind me. And it was like an angelic choir. It was really nice. I challenge you, some of you way back there, sometime in the future, sit right up here. It's fabulous. Okay, he called me a missionary. You know, I don't call myself a missionary. I call myself just a Christian who God moved a few miles farther than most people get moved. I was a school bus driver up in 50 miles north of Syracuse in the school district. I drove bus full time for 30 years. And during that time, we started going on short-term mission trips to Ukraine. But I thought I was well used in my locale up there in upstate New York. I mean, I had, you know, 50 kids behind me all the time, you know, interacting with them. You know, when you'd have, it's cool the way God, this is all introduction. I'll get to the slides. I have the slides. But, you know, a child, you know, would come to the Lord and they knew I was a Christian. And so they'd sit behind me and start asking me questions. And as a bus driver, you know, I couldn't be preaching to the kids, you know, and put signs up. But if a child asked me a question, well, I can answer their question. And even without this microphone, you know, my voice carries quite well. And so I would be talking at that, and everyone else on the bus would be exposed to it. And I thought, that's just one example of many things that where I was, that I was being effective, and that the big, well, we'll get to when I argued with God. I'm not good with languages. In high school, I barely got through Spanish. You know, how easy is Spanish to memorize? You know, I barely got through, so how can I go to, you know, learn Ukrainian, to live there? If I were back home in Ukraine, because I look as Ukraine is my home, we've been there, lived there for 13 years, a little looking in the future. And when the combat started seriously, when the tanks rolled down toward Kyiv, we stayed where we were because, as I've said before to some people, God moved us here. And he didn't say leave. And so we trust God more than the U.S. State Department. The U.S. State Department ran to Poland. We stayed there. And I'm getting ahead of myself, but you know, just the testimony. Maybe the message is just be who you are. Because just by being in Ukraine, people say, what are you doing here? Did you lose your American passport? You can't get across the border? No, we have it. You know, it'd be easy to go across the border and run off. But then we said, what about these children, these orphans that we've been ministering to for 13 years? They can't run anywhere. Are we going to desert them again and say, you know, maybe we'll see you again, but we're leaving the country. God bless you. And you know, and run for it. And said, you know, how could we do that to them again? And so, and God, as you see, there are no holes through me. If we took out this, there's no scars from any kind of shrapnel. We'll show in the slides where we are close to the Russian artillery as we had a chance to minister to people. God wants to use who we are. Let me jump to when we went to Ukraine 13 years ago, and we were wondering, what are we doing here? You know, much more effective in the United States. My wife and I, the two of us went. And a lady came up, and I don't know what you think about a word from God. Well, however she knew that God was trying to encourage us, she came up and said, I've got a word from God for you. So, okay. They're very polite in Ukraine. They ask, can I tell it to you? You know, they don't come up and pitch over the head, thus saith the Lord. You know, can I tell it to you? And I said, well, sure. And it was only two words. He said, God said, just be. And I said, that's it? Isn't there some more, you know? No, just be. And it's been such an encouragement. Just be the person that God made. Just be that person. Whether you're here, you're there, at work, everywhere, just be that person. Be consistent in that testimony, and people will see it. So in Ukraine, it was easy. Like I said, just be. I'm there. Boy, this is gonna be short because I've jumped ahead of all the preliminary stuff because I wanted to get to the. I'll back up. So I drove school bus for 30 years, did trips here to Ukraine, and then I retired. Now, I like this group. We have a good mix of younger to older. You know, it's a healthy family. You know, the name of our group, Family of Christ. And that's what we try to emulate. And, you know, family isn't just a retirement home, you know, with no younger people. So all the kids that went over there, that's great. But I'm retired. Now, we've got a few gray haired people here, good. Well, you got nice gray hair. I wish I had the nice gray hair. I'd scrape my head less and it hurts there. But so I'm retired at age 60. I had 30 years in with the state of New York retirement system. So I could retire with full benefit. And God said, go. And after doing some arguing about that, as I've noted, you know, that we decided to quit. Oh, okay, we got our 30 years in, and we're retired. Now, I've got a little different definition of retired. You know, the Bible talks about life being a race, yes? Paul says it's, you know, makes reference to the Olympics. You know, we run for the race, and we're going for the prize, for the crown. I kind of update it. Life is like a NASCAR race. Okay, I've been around the track a few times. You know, I've avoided hitting the wall. And I've avoided, you know, when people do things that are not good and they destroy their lives. And we've avoided being destroyed in those two. We've gotten around those things. And we've had a lot of adjustments done on us. As, you know, a Christian, we've been in the pits. There's been a lot of adjustments, and we won't go into those. And my wife isn't here today, so we don't have to go into those things. But there's been a lot of adjustments, and we're getting close to the end of the race, or closer than to the beginning. So it's really, this is the last pit stop, and, you know, get a full tank of fuel. Now you can interpret that, the Holy Spirit. Get a full tank of this allegory, full tank of fuel, and we're ready to go full throttle. So we have new rubber on all four wheels, and we're on the track, and we're going full speed because we're retired. and thank you for laughing. I didn't know how that. I don't know how that original humor or God Well, you know, that speaks to, you know, the creativity that God's put in all of us as unique individuals and who we are. You know, I've spoken, at a Christian school, and there's a little girl that she had, a pretty little girl, but she had, you know, all these freckles, and I know that she wishes, well, I didn't have all these freckles on my face. You know, somebody else can. And, yeah, okay, we're back on. But the able to say, you know, God put that, you see that little, I see that little freckle on the end of your nose there. God put that there for a purpose. He created you. And as a Southern preacher, that's where I heard from a Southern preacher, he said, and God don't make junk. Believe it. God will clean up the English. God doesn't make junk. He's created us the way we are. Yes, sin has taken its toll collectively from Adam on, and we have worked. Yes, we've all worked with that sin in our lives and let it get uglier and nastier. But God created us with a special purpose. So we went to Ukraine. We had to finish 3 more years. We'd have our 30 years in. So we said, in 3 years, we're going to be there. And people would ask us, what are you going to do there? And I got kind of embarrassed. Well, I don't know for sure. Are you going to start churches? Well, that's a good thing, right? Well, maybe. Are you going to do this? Well, maybe. Well, don't you know what you're going to do for sure? No. And well, what organization is sending you? And that's the second question always. Well, we didn't have an organization. And I felt embarrassed. I said, you know, well, no, God just said go, and we're going to go, and we'll see what happens there. And you know, I was embarrassed, so I made up a name. And I guess they never looked up on Google if it existed. But when they asked me, what organization is sending you? I said, oh, Jesus and Me. That's the organization. I said, it fit. Jesus and Me. Maybe I should put a copyright on that, because that's a good one. Jesus and Me. But we went there, and God had a plan of the people that we would meet. And we're getting close to the slides now. We just have to cover 10 years of being in Ukraine. We lived in a home for girls who have aged out of the orphanage system. You know, when they age out, you know, they're in desperate situation. I remember a doctor who came, was doing work there, asked the orphan director, this is before our time, says, what happens to these girls when they age out at 16, 17 years old? Because they have no life skills. They have no Jesus. They have no work skills. They're as vulnerable as can be. You know, you're kicked out of the gate. I forget exact percentages. He says, well, in a year or two, 40% will lead a normal Ukrainian life, whatever that is. He said 40% will be, or 50% will be living off the street. And we don't have to be graphic in what that could entail, 50%. And 10% by that time will be dead. So this doctor who built the house for them, for 10 years, we had a tiny little apartment there, and we didn't have responsibilities. It wasn't our group. It was a house that was run by a church, an evangelical church there, a local church. It wasn't, you know, from Germany or America. It was a Ukrainian church, and they ran this house, and we were there, not as director, not as teacher, not as anybody in authority, except we were just there. We just be. In fact, it was in this house that lady said to us, just be. And so when they, is a subsistence farm, so when they went out to pick their corn by hand, well, I got big hands, you know, I could pick it and husk it with them, you know, better than they could, because, you know, and I was much younger then too. And so we lived there and were just the example. And so they could come. One girl came and says, what makes you different in your marriage? Because she was thinking of, it's time for her to move on and thinking about marriage. And so, you know, we didn't have to preach at her. She asked us, and we told her what, you know, the Jesus factor, that we're just as selfish as everybody else. Not because we're less selfish, but that Jesus makes a difference, his grace and his mercy, and it changes us. You didn't know me 30 years ago, and you didn't know Lori, my wife. She's so sweet now. Well, she was sweet then, but she's even sweeter now. And you can tell her that. That's Lori Sliz, that I said nice things about her in front of all you people. But we were there for 10 years. We lived with them, acted like they were our daughters, our biological daughters. You know, when we first went to Ukraine back in 1995, it was our first trip, the economy was totally destroyed. You'd go into a drugstore and you could find nothing. You couldn't find penicillin. And having five children who had their share of ear infections growing up, for lack of a cheap penicillin, you could have an ear infection and be deaf for the rest of your life. And God impressed it on me. What's the difference between your biological children and those children? Yeah, we need to take care of our own biological children, but does God love them any less? And so we were, statute of limitations is gone. We're smuggling in short-dated medical supplies, even old vials of lidocaine for dental work, and syringes and needles, and it all passed through security. And at that time, Soviet Union had just fallen, and there's all these guys with, what are they called, Kalashnikovs, AK-47, who's a gun person? Well, they had those guns, and they're all there, and every suitcase goes through the screening, what's in it. Oh, I gotta tell this. See, that's what's gonna lead us toward 11 o'clock, all these neat things that God did. Because my wife has a suitcase. It's not just a few bottles hidden in among the underwear. The whole suitcase, 50, I think back then you could get 70 pounds. 70 pound suitcase full of pills and medical. It was all medical. And she didn't want to be a part of a prison ministry. Well, I didn't either. And, you know, those are the times you seriously pray. And waiting in those lines, there's a lot of time. And there's a young lady who was looking at the screen for the x-ray. You know, the conveyor goes through the suitcase as she's looking at it. Here comes my wife's suitcase. She was a pretty young lady. What happens, pretty young lady? A handsome young man comes up and sits on the counter in front of her, and they start talking, blocking the screen. Her suitcase goes through, she collects it at the other end, And she goes out and she gets on the van and says, oh, this is like what happens in those Sunday school stories that we read about. It happened to me. It went through. Hallelujah. I mean, if she was ever tendency to being charismatic, she was there because she was praising the Lord, jumping and skipping and everything because she saw God did it. God did it. We finished our 10 years there. Oh, God uses who we are. I love flowers, planting them. My nails are pretty clean because, well, for the last week we haven't done much in the dirt. You know, snow is a lot cleaner than dirt. And we had several feet of snow up in upstate New York. We had 2 feet one time and another foot a couple more times. We're in the lee of Lake Ontario, so we get the lake effect up there. But I like planting things, and a project at home, right, where we lived for 30 years, was to grow blueberries. And any farmers here? Anybody a farmer? Nobody? Okay, good. Well, I'm just talking to you and explain it to them later. We're on high lime soil. Grows great alfalfa. That's alfalfa growing, you know, for cows, for dairy cows. But blueberries need very acid soil, maybe a pH of 5 or even lower, pH of 4. On that soil, they absolutely won't grow. But we found we could truck in sawdust and basically make raised beds. And so we had that experience. And that was a family tradition, the 80 plants. The kids would go out there when a new baby was born and they get to be a toddler. We go out to, it's time to pick blueberries, take them out to there, and they start picking them and eating them. And okay, you're one of us. We didn't get switched at the hospital, somebody else's baby. You're our baby. We know you're a Sliz baby. But having that experience, we went to Ukraine, not with the idea I was going to be planting blueberries, but having that experience, and we're talking about our experience in our life, you know, things that we've done, God has made, developed talents, abilities, interests, just the interest. And we got there, and I saw on a trip, they use everything. The Roma, there's a large gypsy Roma population in southwestern Ukraine, and they use everything. They even use sawdust and compress it into bricks and make homes out of compressed sawdust bricks that keep the rain off of it because otherwise it'll... But I saw a couple sawmills that were just dumping that precious sawdust in a ravine. And I said, oh, I could do the same thing that we did in America. Because I'm not part of the Blueberry Association producers, but I'll let you know the fact that blueberries have the highest level of antioxidants of any fresh fruit native to North America. Good stuff. And I thought, you know, these girls, they could use some good stuff. And nobody's growing them. So that's a good cash crop for them. Because, you know, a lot of projects, Christian projects, I mean, just think of the ones you know. Very few of them last beyond the founders. You know, they dwindle away because the passion and the fervor of the founder carries it along. God blesses. And many times the children or whoever take over don't have that same fervor. So this house for these girls, I said, you know, the doctor who built it, not going to be around forever, so they need to be able to, you know, self-fund. I said, oh, this would be a good project. And they let me bring in 500 plants, and we had, during those 10 years, you know, a mature quarter acre. Now, I hope I don't offend by this joke. So on a quarter acre of land, you know, that's not much. What's that? A quarter acre is 100 feet by 100 feet. We had 500 plants, and in a good year, we netted, not gross, we netted $5,000. $5,000 on a quarter acre. That, you know, to make more, you'd have to be growing marijuana. You know, we wouldn't do that, and you would be jail ministry for sure if we did that in Ukraine. They're very old school along that line. But we're able to help them. We left that, and then we then met another group of people, and that's where we're going to get to the slides. Yes, he's finally. So, oh, I'm in the control. So that goes that way, and all I have to do is it turned on. So all I have to do is hit the first one. All I have to do is hit the first one, or did I point it that way? There. Oh, there we go. Now in the news, you find out where is Ukraine. You know, before this invasion of February, people would say, we'd say, we're in Ukraine. And they'd say, oh, South America? No, that's Uruguay. Oh, Africa? No, that's Uganda. Oh, Asia, right? Asia? No, that's Uzbekistan. Ukraine is in Eastern Europe. So you can see there, you know, Poland and north of Romania and Hungary. There's the capital, the fighting's going on the east. And we live right in Uzhgorod, right in the southwest corner, nestled against Slovakia and Hungary. And that's because we knew that we needed to be ministering to the Roma community, and there's a huge Roma community in Romania, Hungary, and this corner of, especially this corner of Ukraine. Another little side story. You know, I don't come here with any titles. You know, I don't like titles. That's why I didn't like the title, "You're a Missionary." No, I'm not a missionary. God just moved me. I'm trying to be a Christian, to emulate being a Christian. As best I know, that's it. But I do retain one title. When a feeding program for the Roma, you know, we'd help with the buying the food, but they would do all the work, make the meals, distribute it, you know, teach the Bible and all that. Once in a while, I'd visit, and I was, they'd call me Jimbachi. And so I said, you know, what does that mean in the Roman language? And said, well, it's like a term of endearment. It's like if you said Uncle Jim in America, you know, you're not biologically related, but you say, oh, that's Uncle so-and-so, or that's Aunt Lucy. You know, it's someone who is dear to the family, but not biologically related. So that's what the kids on their own were calling me, not, you know, Mr. Jim or something like that, is Jimbachi. So that title is precious, and I will, maybe on my tombstone, I'll have to tell my children, put that Jimbachi sliz on the stone. Okay, so, oh, I get to do the thing, don't I? Does it matter which way I should point it, that way toward the unit? Oh, no. Okay, so we are part of a, you would call it an organization. We call it an organism. The name Family of Christ, it was so, the person, our leader who named the group, because they wanted to apply to be recognized as a nonprofit in Ukraine and then in the U.S. So we got the 501(c) status, and that's why it's called, well, that one doesn't say international, but Family of Christ International. It just, God started, oh, I don't have to look back there. I can look up there. Great. We're in the evangelical church, and we're part of a home group, I guess. And one guy in it, 13 years ago, he had just become a Christian. He's 20-something at the time. And Imagine this. We come on the scene and he says, oh, you've been around Christianity for a while. Be my mentor. I said, oh, no, I didn't take the course on being how to be a mentor. You know, he said, uh-oh, forget about the course. But we have spent the following 13 years together learning from each other. But 13 years ago, he said, I'm going to an orphanage this next Saturday. Want to come along? I said, sure. I like kids. I have five of them. I have 13 grandchildren. And I drove a school bus and survived for 30 years. I mean, you got to either love kids or you'd be crazy by now. So we went with him, and we caught, I guess, what he had, that passion for him. I guess, you're going to say he never used the Bible verse. Okay, here's at least Bible verse number one. A verse that became real to us was James 1:27. James 1:27. Religion, and I got my King James Scofield Reference Bible here, the one that I bought when I first became a Christian 51 years ago. 51 years ago, December 27th, and it's still a little used. Wait, I should say a lot used. Don't say it's little used. No, we don't want to say that. But we went to the orphanage with him, and that started a relationship, and we're in a home group, and I guess this home group was different than the other home groups. Well, I'm not trashing the church, but sometimes we get organizations, and we got all these home groups, and they did their thing every Wednesday. They got together, and they had good fellowship, and that's good. But this home group was different. It's a, our purpose is to serve others. I think that's more like the Christian message. And part of that was to be visiting the, as this verse says, to visit the orphans and the widows in their affliction. And so we visited them for those years. Now we can get actually in the, okay, hit it once. Oh, okay, I love this picture because I'm in it. No. Look at the look on the face of that little boy. Because right there, I don't know a lot of Ukrainian, but I know in that picture, I remember, I was pretending he was a little baby, and I'd say into Ukrainian, oh, my little baby, oh, don't cry, little baby, and I'm rocking him. And, he may never have had a man holding him, rocking him, that was a good experience in his life. And these orphanages, most of them aren't orphans because their parents died. Most of them are social orphans, taken away by the state, or parents gave them up, they couldn't feed them, they were abusing them. There's a lot of alcoholism, drug abuse. So a lot of them are social orphans. A lot of them, never had a man just hold them and play with them. There's some other pictures, but okay. We'll get to those other pictures. I can say that. Okay. So we're doing small potatoes, actual small potatoes. There's potatoes, onions, cabbages, all in a garbage bag. And this is God allowed us to take a Toyota Tacoma pickup truck to Ukraine. Now, I asked someone if your fire department's barbecue chicken to raise money. Up in New York, they do a lot of it. There's a Cornell Cooperative Extension, Cornell up in Ithaca, and they had a recipe, a non-tomato-based barbecue, and all the fire departments do it to raise money. So we did it, except we didn't do it like twice a summer. We did it every Saturday from when the snow stops, maybe the 1st of May, it depends, until the 1st of September when school starts again. Every Saturday, rain or shine, when my son was getting married that Saturday night, and my daughter said, and my wife said, no, you've got to, can't do the barbecue Saturday morning. They're getting married in the evening. I said, it's in the evening. I'll have someone else help finish it. I'll be there. If I fall asleep, you yell at me then at the reception. But what does the father of the groom have to do? Just be there and smile and stay awake, I guess. That's part of it. So we did that. So that truck, we were able to use it. Nobody in our group had our leader didn't have a vehicle. This made it a lot easier going to the orphanage. God did a lot of different things, provided there was a local nursery that started these apple trees. In the spring, they pull, their size to pull them all. They have an overstock. They're pulled, so that a couple hundred trees, take them to the orphanage, replant their orchards, which were old and trees that, were no longer productive, but help feed those kids in the orphanage. So, God provided things like that. Oh, here's an orphan. Boy, he's in all these pictures. He's here at an orphanage, a washing machine, LG, the big institutional size things. They break. They're tremendously expensive. You get a good brand, and you get much more use out of it, and we can afford, get some donations and deliver a washing machine to this orphanage. There's the director. Oh, the director. Oh, we'll go to this little diversion. We're playing with the kids in the orphanage. Our leader, when he goes, he would usually go talk. Now, this isn't the leader, but he'd go talk to the director. The director came to the Lord. Now, how does that help the institution of the orphanage when you have the directors a Christian and there's some workers that are Christian and we're working with the kids, demonstrating, love for the kids? Yeah, it makes a much better life for those orphans and Christianity than they have the holiday programs. The Christmas programs can be more meaningful. It's not Grandpa Frost or whatever the Russian equivalent is. It's Jesus. So we were doing, but everything's small potatoes. Then, I gotta flip this page. No. So I know where I'm going. I said widows and orphans. Oh, here's a widow, a village person sitting on her porch. We come by, food bags, or go to the village. I don't know much Ukrainian. Anyone here speak Ukrainian? Oh, good. So I can say, Podarunok vid Boha, and you wouldn't know if I said it wrong. But say, this is a gift from God. I learned that. I memorized that. Give them a bag of food. This is a gift from God. What's your angle? What do you want? You want money? I don't have money. No, a gift from God. God loves you. Bog lubit vas. Sproudly, sproudly, God. Bog lubit vas. Oh, I get excited. I do remember some Ukrainian. So, that's what we do. That's what the verse says to do, right? Whether they're at home or they're in the nursing home. Here's some Santa Claus, the young ladies, visiting the ladies a little bit older, bringing presents. Oh, look at that warehouse. That was 20,000 square feet. Now, when the war started, the war started, I gave a little history lesson. Really, Russia has been, and I said I wasn't going political, but Russia has invaded Ukraine 39 times in the last 300 years. And they have never lived up to any document of peace or, here's our, to end the hostilities. Never. 39 times in the last 300 years. I'll say no more on that. But, so when you know, the latest invasion started in 2014 in Crimea and the Donbas, which is the very eastern part of Ukraine. So during this time, we're still doing our thing, you know, our small potatoes. We were happy we had, we called it our warehouse, but it was just a 200-square-foot room on the second floor of a government building, and the rats would go under the door so you couldn't have food, short-dated food that you're trying to give out that needed to be in cans or stuff because the rats would... 200 square feet. The war started, and within a week, maybe it was 10 days, no, it was only a week, we had this 20,000-square-foot warehouse that you can use it. Ooh, that's a biblical-type number, isn't it? That's like 100-fold, 200 feet, square feet, 20,000. Yeah, 100-fold. We were just there. We were just being what we were supposed to be. We get this warehouse. Well, well, not just the warehouse, but now the potatoes were not just a little bag of potatoes coming in. You know, here we got the pallets of potatoes coming in. Tractor trailers of things coming in. And now, and within a couple of weeks, this is what the warehouse looked like. You know, because we were just being there as Christians. You know, a lot of people in the world were saying, we heard those Ukrainians, they're all crooks. And you know, we want to help, but we don't want to just go to a bunch of crooks. But they could look on social media. And I suggest you look, I got advertised, you know, that little Family of Christ logo, if you look on, you can see 13 years of what we've been doing in Facebook, Family of Christ International, or if you look at the website, it was a professionally done, some volunteers in America made a really nice, and it shows all kinds of things that are going on to learn much, much, much more. But you know, the stuff came in. I brought that Tacoma truck over. In a few weeks, we had the use of 15, 16 vans. That comes ahead here. Oops. We were part of a feeding program. Someone volunteered the tens of thousands of dollars to set up a cafeteria for people that are fleeing the East. So there would be, you know, 1,000 people a day getting fed in this thing, but they needed a conduit to bring this money in. And they chose us to you be the conduit, because we can trust you. You've been doing it for 10 years. We can see what you've been doing, and we can see that you don't have the director. You don't have a house. You don't have a new car. You don't have, it hasn't gone in his pocket. They could see it. So we could be the conduit. And in that first year or half a year, with those vans, we were loading them up with bags of food to send to the East, and then come back with 8 or 9 refugees that were fleeing the war. And this was just, you know, this is when international organizations, and if you're part of, I'm just picking this one, so if you're part of the Red Cross, I'm sorry, but in Ukraine, the Red Cross was just sitting, you know, we had vans going to the East with Russian jets flying over their head, and they're wondering if they're going to be bombed on the road, because the Russian army, and that they like killing civilians. That's part of the terror campaign. So if you've got a Red Cross on the top of your van, that's just the targeting aid. That's not going to keep them from strafing or bombing your vehicle. That's a targeting aid. And so we had people who were going back there. They wouldn't let me go back. Well, I don't know the roads. I don't speak Ukrainian well enough. And they said, you'd be like a trophy. You're American. They said, CIA, you're CIA. You know, I would have been tortured from here till next year for me to admit that I was CIA and to make a video for them telling how I was CIA. I don't get any money from any three-lettered government agency. But we had people going there, risking their lives. Another, just be who you are. So we're at the beginning of the war. It had just started. Nobody knows what's going on. And we don't. You know, are the Russian paratroopers going to land in our airport, even though we're way on the west? You know, land on the airport, secure the runway, in comes the transports, and, you know, they've got their troops on the west, and they're coming to, you know, hunt us down. You know, we don't know. Everybody's nervous. They've got checkpoints all along the main roads going north and south, and we needed some medical supplies, needed to go between a hospital in Uzhgorod, where we were, in 3 hours north in Lviv. And there's all these checkpoints. So this was my job, to drive up there. Well, I was a school bus driver. I could drive pretty well most of the time. No. My job was to be an old man American. Hey, I can do that, because we have this young Ukrainian who's driving. But, you know, he looks more like a soldier, you know, someone who has a gun. And, you know, I'm the American in the driver's seat, old man American. And you come up to the checkpoint, turn the headlights off, come near it, turn the headlights off, turn the inside lights on, and keep your hands on the dash. And I've got my American passport, which is a different color than Ukrainian. Theirs are kind of maroon. Ours are nice, dark blue. And, you know, smile. Because Americans smile, especially American Christians. They know you. Because we smile too much? No, I don't think we can smile too much. Yeah. And we got through safely, and even when we needed to go then to the rail station, which it was chaos, and they didn't want to let any vehicle go anywhere near the rail station. But again, do I look like a Russian spy? No, nope, guess not. So they let us through. God used me just being an old man American. That's all I had to be. Just be what who you are. So that was in the beginning. Oh, and let's get to, our little home group grew. That's our home group. That, you know, started out by, you know, four or five people. Many of these people were refugees from the east, who stayed here. I think we're praying over somewhere there in the center. We're in their backyard having a barbecue. We always, you know, fellowship and food. You know, they both don't just start with F. You know, they're really in the culture of, it's in our DNA of all people of the world. It really is. It's not just these people. So there's a fellowship together. Oh, let's show now. Okay, am I pointing the right way? Nope. Try pointing that way. Oh, here's a baptism of 9 people. Now that's not from our small group, but one of the men in our small group went through a alcohol drug recovery program. Gloriously saved, is part of our group, and the place that the ministry that saved that they, the ministry didn't save them. Let me get this straight: the ministry that allowed him to be saved through the power of our Lord Jesus Christ. They had 9 men who also made that decision and wanted to be baptized. So this was a 4-hour trip, but this is part of what I try to make the point, being the family of Christ. Now, who wants to make a 4-hour trip on crummy roads? Like going down I-81 across your state, right? I didn't go that way. They told me, don't come down that way. You'll think you're back in Ukraine. But we went there to be with these men and to be supportive of them, just to, you know, good job, and to witness the baptism. Okay, moving right along. And we were meeting in a warehouse for several months. It was, a real warehouse. As a young Christian, we went up to Toronto to the airport church, and they were in a warehouse area, but they remodeled it to look like just a huge building, really nice. No, we were in the actual warehouse with the pallets that you saw before. But they said, some people like to have, think you need to have a regular building. And so we're able to rent this. I should have gotten the one that had the people in front, but So here, this building, we have a congregation of, probably 80 adults and lots of children. Lots of children. It's good to see lots of children. You know, I wouldn't have minded if all the children here were running around and making noise, because I can make more noise than them. But here, we're putting on the whole armor of God. Spiritually, we're putting on the whole armor of God. Sometimes, you got to put on the physical armor. Now, I'm not the poster boy, but it's one size fits all. So my stomach really doesn't. But body armor, because we went to minister, on the in Kherson. If any of you follow where the fighting goes on, Kherson is the capital of an oblast, which is the equivalent of a state, right along the Dnipro River before it runs into the Black Sea. And the Russians own the east side of the river, and the Ukrainians own the left side, which has most of the city. City that used to be 300,000 people. Now it's, last I knew, it was maybe 50,000 people. Most of those are older people, people who have lived their life there and probably have, if I'm going to die someplace else, I might as well die in the home that I've lived in for the last 60 years, and my family has been here for 5 generations, and they're there, and there's pastors. Now, in a lot of churches, the pastors ran just as fast as the people from the east, from Kiev and other places where, with fear of what was coming. But there were still people left. And there were men of God who said, I'm staying and I'm serving these people. Come what may, I'm going to serve them. And so, whoever is doing the sermon on a spring morning on Sunday said, we're too comfortable here in Uzhgorod. We don't have bombs coming down in our oblast, because it's said that Putin has promised if he took the whole country, he would give that to Hungary. So Orban is happy that it'll now again be part of Hungary, because it was in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, part of Hungary. So you don't bomb the gift before you give them the gift. And there's communities of ethnic Hungarian people there. So you don't want to be killing the Hungarian people, before you give the gift. So if you come to Uzhgorod, I think you'd be safer than going to Philadelphia for sure. Maybe Pittsburgh, certainly Syracuse. It's a relatively safe area. But he said, we're too comfortable here. And I took him to heart. But what can I do? Well, did I tell you we barbecued chicken? Yes. And that's how we bought the truck. I said, well, I can go there and I can barbecue chicken. I can, and we'll show you the little video in just a moment. We had someone in our church did ironwork, and he welded up the 4 units, and we got the wood, and we got 50 kilograms of good thighs. You know, no back connected to the thigh. It's just the thigh of the chicken. 50 kilograms, 110 pounds. Had them in coolers, had them in the sauce, got our old wood together, went out there with some people who wanted to go there, and we're gonna feed the people at a church. People that are there out the church, and then the pastor said he could take it to some of the army people over there. They would trust him. They wouldn't trust us as strangers, but he could minister to them. And the next day they were having a children's program. I think maybe it was a Wednesday service or whatever, and they're having a program the next day with the kids, and so they'd have some chicken left over. So we went there, and I didn't realize. They said, well, you got to wear body armor. Okay, so we put on that. And this is old style. This is not Kevlar. This is metal plate. In fact, I got back, you know, at the beginning of the war, some of those. In our warehouse, we do not supply, what would you call that? The stuff that kills people, that type of equipment. But we do supply protective things. At the beginning, we got a load of steel plate from Great Britain, and maybe this is one of the units we made. We were making body armor for not only the police, but for the soldiers that were on the front, because it was in the power of our hand to help. And people hadn't planned it out in a 10-year plan, 5-year plan, said, why can't we do such and such? Why can't we? And they did it then. And so this is one of the, before going into Carson, we all put on our body armor and
open it up for me.
Yeah. Oh, and here's our cooking chicken. You hear that? That's 152 caliber Russian artillery.
Yes, we're leaving.
Get your glow, Jim.
We gotta go. We gotta go.
Like Rudy said the last time, the last time we're here, he said to us, we gotta go now.
Спасибо. Да благословить вас Господь. И хранить. И благословить.
Дякуем.
Мне уже 84 года. Уже 84 года.
Вы молодец.
Еще сопали и копали.
So the booms, 152 caliber Russian artillery, just indiscriminately shot into the city. No military targets, just people, to terrorize the people. And I was still cooking. You heard this, we gotta go. No, we gotta finish this chicken first. We gotta finish the job before we can go. But then we did go because our military friends there said, the Russians know you're here, and they're probably trying to get some artillery or rocket that they can target because, there's 4 Americans there, 4 of us. And they would just love to blow up, besides all those people eating, Ukrainians, but, you know, the cherry on the cake would be 4 Americans. And so we did leave before they aimed anything on us or on the people. But 2 weeks later, 3 of those people that were at that dinner, at that service, they were dead from artillery fire. And in the year, a rocket artillery hit the church while people were in it, and there were over 40 people injured. But you know, the pastor stayed. People were there. He didn't forsake the sheep and say, you know, run for the hills, you know, run into the fields. Oh, wait a minute, the fields all have mines in them. So don't run in the fields, but run someplace. So when you can help people like that, well, let's go to, oh, we went by a couple. Oh, here's non-lethal aid we provide, but a pastor friend of us, he was called into the army at the very beginning. That's him in the very back. I think we're praying over him. That car behind him, we supplied that car so that he was with an artillery group so he could get, we're winding up. And the picture on the right is the car got a little too close to an exploding piece of artillery. Fortunately, he wasn't in the car at the time, but so much for the car. I think we've got him on his third car. Faithful man of God. You know, when you're a pastor and you're with an old-style artillery, not the HIMARS. You know, HIMARS, shoot and scoot, anybody military? You know, that's the model. Shoot and scoot so the counter artillery doesn't target you and take you out. Well, he's in a unit, it's the old style drag artillery behind you. You don't scoot. I mean, if there's counter batteries, you could be dead. He's been there 2.5 years. And people are open. Someone asked, well, how many Christians do you have, you know, in a ministry in the trenches? And the answer was, in the trenches, everyone's a Christian. Or everyone is seeking. Everyone is seeking. If everyone be dead the next minute. Great place to be ministering if you've got the zeal for the Lord. Okay. Oh, you know, if you come to Ukraine, you know, with the kids, here's the hospital, veterans. Oh, here's my family came. Four of my daughters, a couple of their husbands, and 6 of the grandchildren all came. And one of the things, visited the hospital. Now you see the picture with all the people. That's my lovely firstborn on the far right, Sarah, and her daughter, 18-year-old daughter. And of course, the young men like to see, you know, pretty young ladies come in and visit them. But you know, they even like me visiting them. I'm not a pretty anything. But, you know, just that you haven't forgotten. And we don't hit them over the head with the gospel. You don't have, oh, they got to give the, you know, 4 spiritual laws. But, you know, things happen like, you know, in a room with 5 and one asks, and his interpreter we have, he says, why are you here? You know, I'm just here. Why are you here? You don't have to be here. You have someone who's honestly asking the question, and you can give your testimony of why you're here and giving the glory to Jesus. And it's because of him and his love for them. And he's hearing it, and there's 4 other men in there who didn't ask. Oh, but they're hearing it too, whether they wanted to hear it or not. And you're having that that effect on them. And if you go back a second time, it's not just, okay, we checked it off our list. We went to an orphanage, check. We went to the hospital, check. We gave out some food baskets, check. Okay, trip's completed, it's done, we're finished. But you know, when they see you come back a second time, what motivates you? You say, you know, we can give the answer. It's not because I'm a good person. It really isn't. You want to hear a story? We're not going to glorify past in that story. But it's not because we're a good person. It's because of the good Lord Jesus Christ. And he loves you too. And he has a plan for you too. Whether you're in the hospital or you're right here. And yes, I was told lunches burn at 11 o'clock. So within 4 minutes, I need to say amen. Okay, quick. Oh, here's playing with kids. I gotta say it. playing with kids, because you don't see kids, I'll talk fast, most, you know, kids who have been abused by men, abused by people, they're afraid. You come into the room, the door, and some of them will go to the corner and go, ah! And getting to the point of you're playing with some of the kids and they say, oh, I want to, we got one with rough housing. Oh, I'm just on the floor with them. But you get rough housing, you know, you can do it 2 and 3 year olds, 4 year olds, you know, wrestle them, and you know, they don't know about electric cars. You can go with the car, you know, you can do all that. And you have the ones that are afraid who will, oh, I want to be involved, but I'm afraid. And you know, after a period of time, it might be an hour, it might be months, but eventually they take the chance and, you know, you hold me. And, you know, I ask, you know, may I? You know, don't assume anything. You know, may I? And you've made them adoptable, more adoptable. I mean, if you came into the room, unless God told you, that child with the red ribbon in their hair is the one that you're supposed to adopt. Okay, where's the red ribbon? If not, you come in and you see a child in the corner screaming, or one that comes running to you at the door and, pick me up, pick me up. Who's more adoptable? Whether you're a Christian or a non-Christian, yeah, that one that, you know, that one in the corner screaming might spend their whole life doing that. Might be forever. So we make them tactile intervention, what we call our playing, and we make them more adoptable just by playing with them. People, just by playing with them, as you played with your own kids, your own grandchildren, your own. Okay. Oh, okay. Moving right along. Oh. Last, here's our project. You know, I talked about being a gardener. God has given us, although the government hasn't signed it over yet, a piece of property, 17 acres. It was part of the collective farm. You see it's a little overgrown from the last 35 years. That building is. But we have faith that we're, our director wants to adopt 10 boys and keep rotating them in. He says, you know, there's a lot of ministries for girls. They need it. But he says, the church needs godly men. And how are they going to have godly men unless we train them up? And it can't be just, you know, having the government put, what do you, foster care. That's good. That's a good step. But it says adopting them where you're responsible and we're not going to give up on you no matter what. And you're not going to run away from this family and tell the government, oh, I've been abused. Get me out of that house. When, you know, because you just want to be out of that house. So we're growing blueberry plants. To finance this, we're 17 acres, hope to have 10 acres. Right now we have 3,500 plants. And, oh, here's my family last spring transplanting bigger pots. And, you know, here's some more plants. Because I guess we're all in here for the long run, right? The race, if it's a 500, I don't know, I'm sorry, I don't know, NASCAR races, is it like a 400 mile or however, depending on the location. We're all in it for the long haul, right? To get to the end. And our director said, you know, can you start a blueberry plantation like you've already done? Can you be grandparents in our house? Function as grandparents. Says, yep, we've done it. We've done both. Says, okay, we'll start getting little plants, 3-inch little plants, 1-inch square by 3-inch little plugs. That was 3 years ago. And this collective farm property, there's a way, a process to privatize it so it goes to the people. And so he says, yes, we can start this process, but you know, we can't build, we can't plant, do all these things until we get the property. But we'll start getting the plants. You know, 3 inches tall, they need to grow a little bit. And then first, who has jurisdiction to do this? We don't want to give somebody money and then they find out, oh, they didn't have jurisdiction to give us that, sign over the land. You just gave your money away. Then it was legislative elections were coming up. No, we can't do anything because we don't know what the laws will be. And I keep going to Rudy and say, are we still going to do this? Yes, we'll get some more plants. See, we started with a couple hundred plants. Okay, buy some more plants. Bring them in. Start them growing. Then the next thing is there's a presidential election. When Zelensky was like, oh, we don't know what's going to happen. Can't do anything. Are we still going to do this, Rudy? Yep, okay. Get some more plants. Then COVID came, right? And you know about that. Can't do anything because there's COVID. Yeah, we got some more plants. We're believing it's going to happen. Oh, then the war came. Time to wrap up. And the prayer. I'm glad you don't have that little cane from the Christmas program, the little staff. It's we're all here for the long term. And let me pray with that. Can I pray over you? Can I earnestly pray for each of you, whatever, just collectively? If you don't want something to fall on you, duck. I don't know if you can do that. But let me pray. Thank you for your patience. I hope your lunch isn't burned yet. Father, thank you for this group of believers here. They're here for a purpose. Lord, let each of them know their purpose individually and collectively, how they are to function, not just to say, well, this is a program, maybe I'll fit in, but to use the creativity that you put in all of us to say, hey, can we do such and such? And for the pastors to the leadership to consider and say, if it's why not, then to do it and give them the energy, the vision, and the stick-to-itiveness to accomplish what you have for them to accomplish personally, first of all with people, and then for whatever the object of the people, the object of this ministry. Thank you for the patience of the people during, again, Lord, that they can show mercy to me because of I get carried away. This zeal needs to be controlled and more managed and to be more palatable for people. But I pray that it was communicated that you have a purpose for all of us, and just to be the person that you created us to be, and that you will one day, we'll come to see you face to face. Oh, Lord, that each of us will hear, however that's communicated. Oh, it's a mystery how that's going to go on, but that we'll know, God, that you're saying, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. So bless the people here, the future. Thank you for blessing the past and the future, to be excited about the new year, a new year starting. Not silly resolutions saying for the new year, but individual resolutions on how we are going to be your servant. We're going to be your friend. We're going to be your servants, Lord, that you created us to be. Thank you again. Thank you for these musicians that will be leading a song of dedication. And let us ponder that. Let's ponder the thought. We pray in Jesus' powerful name. Amen.
Amen. Everyone.